Evening. Buyer's remorse. Buy a new car? I'll be moving in. Let's get started.
Sorry, I think there's been a mistake. I bought it from Carvana.
You what?
Yeah, great price. I even have 7 days to love it or return it.
So there's no...
No buyer's remorse. More like buyer's rejoice.
I guess I'll let myself out. Congratulations. I mean it.
Buyer's rejoice. Buy your car today on Carvana.
Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local, instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is Chat Missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Soapy. I'm Rebecca Buddy.
And I'm Greg Rickhardt. And on today's show, we have one of my favorite co-stars. And that's saying a lot because I work on Days of Our Lives and we have the best cast and all of my co-stars are amazing. Okay. So joining us today, we have Sherry Jimenez, who plays we're actually related through marriage. Anyway, she plays Gabby. She's incredible. Are you okay? You guys, we'll be right back. I'm going to make sure she pulls it together, and you're not going to want to miss this because we have Sherry Jimenez. She's incredible, and stick around.
Welcome, Sherry.
Welcome, Sherry.
You told me you wanted me to start.
Go ahead. I'm about to say welcome.
Sherry, thank you for being here.
Oh my God, thank you guys for having me.
The two of you were just like sitting there smiling at each other.
I know.
We love each other.
I know we do. I am so excited to be here. Thank you guys.
I don't know what you love about him, but everything. I love you instantly because we share a human connection with our friend Lee Kilton Smith.
Oh. The best. She is wonderful. She is our acting teacher. And also a great friend.
Yes.
So wait, do you guys overlap in class together? Because I know you...
So I took class and she took class on a different day, mm-hmm. but she came in and did a scene. Like she had to come in and do a scene during our class.
To make up a scene in your class. Yeah. And then I remember you making a comment about it because that's how I met you at the time.
Or maybe afterwards. Was it afterwards?
And it was after. Yeah, it was after. It was after. And so I always just knew you from that. And so when I started in the soap world, I was like, I know her from that one class that I made up, but I don't know her. So when I found out I was doing this, I was like, I don't know if she's going to remember.
I knew we were having you on here and I knew you were on Days of Our Lives. And for some reason, I just didn't put it together.
When did it click? Because you said it this
I'm
morning.
I'm old and I have a horrible memory. But I started going down the rabbit hole and Sean Ferris is your husband. He was in class with mm-hmm. me. So I knew him. And then I was like, wait a minute. But I know her too. And I don't know if it was like, and I was like, she was in class or something.
Yeah,
and
I was in class for years.
But also, when you're close with Lee, you know all who the people that she's close with. Yeah,
and they're great. And she speaks so highly of you. She loves you so much.
I love her.
I was just over the other day and I told her I was doing Soapy and she was so excited. And I was like, I'm so excited because I've been watching this for the last two months.
So sweet.
Which is amazing, which funny enough, I'll tell you, when I first started watching it, I watched it just to watch Deidre because I was like, oh, of course, I got to watch my girl. I love her. And then you guys were talking about Eric and the prior episode, and I was so fascinated with his story of the little tidbits of what you said that it made me go back and watch the first episode. And then I realized, you know what? I actually want to watch all of this because not only have I learned so much about all of the different actors, the producers, and everybody within the soap world, but I've learned so much about the soap world, about the stories that people have, just kind of life stories and
we are changing lives here on Soapy.
But I'll tell you, I think that, and you might have, you might know this already because you've been on dates for now 2 years, right? Roughly. When we get interviewed by Soap Press, it's typically about our characters and our storyline and less about
Which is a valuable lane, and it's the fans love hearing about that.
They do love hearing about
that. But the inside baseball of this is
But
is
just getting to know the actor, there's so much more to
I'm fascinated by everyone. It's really on the second season, and my last one was Kelly Ripa, whose story was incredible. I mean, honestly, everybody, I just love it. You're and it's sweet. So funny because I've followed a couple people and they're probably like, who's this girl just following me? Because like their story has just touched me and stayed with me for so long that I was like, okay.
Well, you know, it's funny.
There you go, guys.
In a similar fashion, if there's ever a guest that we have come on that I don't know, even on our end, doing the research, even ahead of like meeting them on the show is... I always find it so fascinating, and it's a great job, and you have been on our list for so long, and I'm so thrilled that you are here.
I was so honored when I saw the email. I was like, even stepping in here, I got a little starstruck. I was like, oh my God, this is crazy, because I'm a fan and I've enjoyed it so much. So I feel completely
honored.
Well,
welcome. We're fans too.
I want to talk about you growing up in New York and like going.
We've
to
bonded
the,
over our the, outer ooh, borough.
You went to performing arts school, yeah?
Yeah, I went to PPAS, which is the Professional Performing Arts School. There are three performing arts schools. There's LaGuardia, the Professional Children's School, and then PPAS. So
Where is PPAS?
It was on 48th Street between 8th and 9th, or 9th and 10th. It was a little further down.
Was it a K through 12?
No, it was middle school and high school. And so that changed my life completely because it basically brought this whole world into my life. But I can go back to New York and kind of just how I got there, if you want, as far
please.
As my
Yeah. Tell us.
So I grew up in New York City, all over New York City. My mom was a single mom. She had a teenage pregnancy, so she had me when she was young. And her and my abuela took care of me. And so we started out, I'd say, probably like in the Bronx. And then unfortunately, when I was 5, we had a tragic situation that basically took our home away. And so we ended up homeless, I guess. But when I say homeless, I like to just clarify, because now homelessness is such an epidemic and there's such a understanding of what homelessness is. So with us, I like to say that we always had angels that took care of us. So no matter what, we always had somewhere to sleep.
Was it just the three of you? Or did you have a sibling?
No. It was just the three of us. So after I was 5, we basically had somewhere to live, and then we had nowhere to live. Unfortunately, I was in a tragic fire with my abuela, and we lost everything. Baby pictures, everything that we had, and...
That's really dramatic.
Yeah, but like I said, we had angels along the way. So that's why when people ask me where I'm from, I'm like, well, I lived in Bronx, Brooklyn, Lower East Side, just like all over. And they're like, huh? What does that mean? So I spent a good majority in the Lower East Side. I lived in Alphabet City. I lived in the Bronx. I lived in Brooklyn. I just kind of lived wherever we found a angels. Place to sleep, like for the night kind of thing. Or for certain months, it just kind of depended on where we ended up. I had, and then Washington Heights.
Oh, yeah.
So that's where my grandmother's sister lived, and that's where I spent all my summers. So that's where my abuela went, and sometimes I would go there, but because a lot of the family members, I have like a big Dominican family, they all live there. So it just kind of depended on when I could sleep there. But the summers, they always took me in, and then my mom would just kind of go and do what she could and make money and figure out how to kind of get our life going so that we could.
When you talk about angels, were these always friends or were you ever in shelters?
Well, I don't know if we were ever in a shelter. I have this memory of one night, and I don't know if it's real or not. I actually have never talked to my mom about it because I never talked about it until I was older. I don't think I was able to process it until I was older. So basically what it was that it was the life that I was used to. So I wasn't aware that it was a thing because I had a little backpack. Mind you, we lost everything that we had. So I always had a little backpack and I always had a couple of t-shirts in there. I had my Barbie from the dollar store. I had my jeans. I just had whatever basically I could fit in this backpack. And so every time that we would uproot and go somewhere else, I would have this little backpack and that's where I would end up. And so because it was the norm for me, I didn't look at it as anything, I guess.
It's what you knew.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's just what I knew. And also growing up in New York City, there's so much there. Mm-hmm. You have Bryant Park in the summers. We would go to Bryant Park and we would go see free movies that they would have. We would go to like a little diner. We would go here. We would go there. So there was always something to do. And so for me, I didn't feel like I had any less of a childhood necessarily. Mm-hmm. It always felt very full. Mm-hmm. And my mom would always take me on adventures, or I would go with my abuela to go here, or, you know, just to kind of go. And then she'd always give me like a quarter to go get candy or a dollar. And I would go to like the dollar store. And I had my little dollar store Barbie that I always carried around with me because I always wanted the real Barbie, which I'll tell you what's really fun about that later on. Yeah, we just kind of always had angels that, I mean, now that's what I call them because I realized that that's what they were. Yeah. They took us in. So I didn't know any better. And, you know, I do remember my mom would sometimes drop me off and then she would leave. And so I don't know where she would go, but it was just enough for me to have somewhere to sleep. So whether it would be on a mattress, a bunk bed, kind of with my cousins, wherever I could. And then during that time, I went to school with a young girl who invited me over afterwards. And she was like, hey, can you come over? And I was like, yeah, I have to call my mom. So I called her on the payphone and I called her and I was like, hey, can I come over? She was like, yeah, of course. And then I went over and her mom basically found out that we had nowhere to live. And she was like, oh, so where do you live? And I was like, oh, no, nowhere. We just, you know, just wherever we could go. So again, the angels were friends and family members and whoever my mom kind of knew at the time. And she was so taken aback by it that she immediately was like, no, you're moving in with us. So we lived in Alphabet City on Avenue C, and it's the projects. And so it was great. I loved it. We had stability for a short period of time, considering just what my life had been. So it was very different and also great because she had two daughters. So it was like having sisters, mm-hmm. I guess. And they took care of us and they really took us in.
This is when you were about five or so?
No. This was when I was eight.
Okay. So there was a few years between when the fire happened and then.
Yeah. So after the fire happened, I mean, I feel like after that, everything was just where can we get to find some safety or to find somewhere to just sleep? I think that was the biggest thing because I remember my days being very full and being outside, being in New York City, just because that's what it was, versus I think the night was probably the one where my mom was like, okay, so where can we go sleep? And so we were always taken in, which was a blessing. But when Wendy took us in Alphabet City, that was when I kind of fell into the acting world, or at least into the entertainment world, because I'd always walk around with my mom and I had really long hair up to here. And I'd always wear, I guess, the same outfit every time, which was my ripped jeans and a white t-shirt. It was a big tomboy. And she would always get stopped and people would always be like, your daughter should model, your daughter should model. And so my mom, at the time, I don't even know if it exists, the Backstage?
Yeah.
Oh, like Backstage East.
And then there would be auditions in there as well. And so she found an audition for Elizabeth Arden for like a sunflower perfume commercial and was like, oh, this is your age range. I think it was literally because it was my age.
Right.
And so my mom took me there. And immediately when I walked in, the prettiest little girls, they had sunflower dresses and flowers in their hair. And I was the only one with ripped jeans in a t-shirt and who knows if, you know, maybe I brushed my hair, but I was like, and I remember, I still remember this, looking at my mom and being like, this is a mistake. What am I doing here? I don't, these girls are so pretty. And here I am with this. And she was like, it's okay, Sherry. And it was a cattle call. So there was like hundreds and hundreds of girls. So I was waiting around all day. And then I finally got up on stage and it was like little personality questions that they ask you where they have you sit around. And I left and I was like, okay, so that's it. Like, didn't expect anything of it. I ended up being the top three. So I made it to the top three. I didn't get the audition. But from that, and I can't think of the casting director. I was trying to get my mom so I could be like, what is her name? Took such a liking to me that she ended up calling me in.
Yeah. I wish your mom was here. Because...
I know. She ended up calling me in. And my first audition was for The Long Kiss Goodnight to be Gina Davis's daughter. And so she brought me in for this audition. And I remember going in. I'd never looked at sides, anything. And she taught me. She was like, it's okay. I'm going to just work with you. And she basically was like, just read them. And she kind of went through this process with me. And I almost got it, but I didn't get it. But what came from that was that this casting director started calling me in for pretty big projects. And so that was just my introduction. And then she said, you need an agent. You need this. You need that. And I was like, oh, okay. So I got these headshots done by a friend of hers who charged us like $100, which was like a lot. And then I ended up going back in the day to get an agent. There were little stickers with like addresses that you could get. And I don't know where it's from. And so I basically made a bunch of yellow,
is when you would mail it.
Yeah,
to
this
the
is,
agent.
When, yeah, yes, this yes, is when yes, you yes. would mail it. And so yeah. I took every single agent on that thing. Sheet.
Yes.
And I just decided to mail them. Only two got back to me out of the 50. And one of them ended up becoming my agent. And so I went in and I started modeling. I started going on auditions and doing commercials. My first booking was for Ovaltine, a Spanish commercial. So Mas Ovaltine, por favor, was my first, was like my first commercial. But I started booking modeling jobs. And because of that, it started giving us, or like it started providing for us to have money. Yeah. To just start saving for a place. So that was the goal. My mom was working at a law firm.
Did you feel pressure?
Not at all.
And to make money or like, you know what I mean?
I don't even think I was aware I was making, I was so young and I was so excited to just be doing it. And I really enjoyed it that I didn't think about the money. Now that I'm older, I understand what it all was. At the time, I was a child.
You were having fun.
I was having
fun. You're like, fun. I love this.
I was so excited. Right. You know, I was excited to go. Like, I modeled for Limited 2. And I went in and, or no, Delia's dot, dot, dash. That's what it was. And they gave me, like, free clothes.
Wow.
I got paid, but the free clothes. I was like, I got free clothes. Yay. Yeah. Like, glitter. But I ended up booking a Barbie campaign, which was wild to me. It was for I'm not quite sure what it was, but it was the 40th or the 50th anniversary of Barbie. And it was this huge campaign. And I booked Teresa Barbie. They chose six girls and like two Barbies and Teresa's the like brunette one. And I ended up getting a bunch of free Barbies from it. So in a full circle way, yeah. I remember just being like, oh my God, this is all I've wanted, you know? And then I had my dollar store Barbie, which I think I still kept because she was my girl, you know? She was
She's
with me
OG.
Through it all. Yeah, she was with me through it all. Yeah. And then I had the Barbie and then like, you know, the outfits and all the things. So that was great. And then I did a Dolce & Gabbana campaign, which was fun with Gisele Bündchen. I modeled from the age of, I'd say, 9 to 13. So during that time, I would just book these amazing jobs. The Dolce & Gabbana one was amazing. Gisele Bündchen was in it. And I shot it with Stephen Meisel. Yeah. And
insane.
I shot it with Stephen Meisel,
oh my
who is a huge photographer. I was in Vogue and Vanity Fair. I mean, look, at the end of the day,
I was in
No. But oh again, at the time, I was just so excited just to...
You didn't care what it was.
But I, as you're saying all this, this is amazing. But yeah. I'm the pragmatist in me is thinking about your mother who just worked so hard to make sure that you were taken care of during that really hard time.
Yes.
And I'm thinking about the green envelopes that are coming because you're doing commercials and every week she's just getting like residual money, which makes me so happy because I'm sure that must have felt so good for her to know that there was some security and stability while, you know.
And like I said, now that I'm older and I'm able to look back at it, I'm like, oh my God, wow. This is amazing. But at the time I was just young. And the great thing was that my mom never pressured me. She at some point said to me, if you don't want to do this, you don't have to do this, Sherry. And I said, okay. And I was like, no, I want to do it. I'm having fun. So I did that. But then what it led me to was acting. So then I started auditioning and booking commercials, but then I booked a couple of like independent films and like a short film. And that
this
was
is all still around the time you're like,
yeah,
10
this
to,
is, well, I only did it from the age, like 13. I said, from Got like it. 9 to 13, because then I stopped.
Wait, but before we get too far ahead, at what point did you, do you remember moving into your own apartment? And what that was like?
I do. I had my own bedroom. I was so happy. So we lived in Alphabet City. And then I had booked enough jobs. We had made enough money, and between my mom at the law firm as well, that she found an apartment for us in Brooklyn. So she found an apartment for us in Brooklyn, and I had my own bedroom. We had a view of the New York City skyline. Wow. I remember because there was a bunch of factories around us.
Was it in like,
where were you, Williamsburg?
Like Green Point?
Yeah. So, kind of Bushwick. I don't know. I would take the L train. And then I remember I lived on Star Street. So on one side would be Hasidic Jews and on the other side were the Latin Kings. And so the Latin Kings took care of us, which was great because Brooklyn isn't, I mean, it wasn't then.
It wasn't then, no.
It was not safe. No. The things I saw from
my
window.
My sister lived in Williamsburg and I'd be like, I'd be leaving Manhattan. I'd be like, if you don't see me in 20 minutes, send out a search
then
party.
This is what it is. Yeah. So, exactly. So, well, that was a thing too. It was like, don't leave after a certain point, which I knew that growing up, once it got dark, you just go inside. There's no reason to be outside. And so Brooklyn was amazing. I loved it. I was so grateful. And I would still go to Washington Heights and go with hang out with my cousins, which is where my love for soap started, but with the Spanish soap operas.
Oh, the telenovelas.
So, yes, I would sneak into my grandmother's room. To my grandmother's sister's room, and she would be watching the soap opera called Dos Mujeres Un Camino, which is two women and one path. And there was like this man, and there was, you know, the rich woman and then the poor woman. And of course, I like loved the poor. I was like, oh my God, yes. And I would sneak in and I would watch it. And then I'd sneak out because if my abuela found out, she was very religious. Oh. She didn't want me watching any of that. She's like, you're too young. But she would sneak me in. So I loved it. I was always like, what's going to happen next? I was like, don't watch the next episode without me. It was like my go-to. And then all the Spanish soaps. I watched all of them. But we moved to Brooklyn and I got my first room and it was the best. But the thing is that because my mom would work, I would end up there by myself. So because I traveled the city by myself, I would ride the subway by myself. I would just call my mom once I get somewhere on the payphone. And I was hanging out with not the best kids. And my landlord basically told my mom, you need to do something about this because she could go down a bad path. But it was just the neighbors. It was just what it was what it was. So she put me into the Broadway Dance Center.
Wow.
And so I went there and I did ballet, I did acting, I did singing, and I actually ended up getting offered a 4-year ballet scholarship to do it professionally. And I chose not to because in that moment, I knew that if I chose ballet, that it would take up all my time and then I would have to give up singing and acting and theater. And I just had more heart in that.
Yeah.
And so ballet always holds such a special place in my heart because I look at it as the path that
you didn't take.
I almost took. But I'm very grateful that I didn't because
it's working out okay.
You know?
And you can take ballet now.
Yeah, exactly.
What's stopping you?
Yeah, you should. I could take it now.
Okay, wait. So then you stopped acting professionally at 13?
Yeah, well, so I started working and what's interesting is that I booked at the Sundance Filmmakers Lab, which they do every year. They choose directors, and then the directors come, and then they get to film like 8 scenes from their movie, and then they bring actors, and you get like a whole workshop, like a whole month and a half of just all these amazing things. When I was 12, I booked Caucasia, which will never come out because it was never made into a film. And so my mom and I packed up and we went to Utah, and we went there for a month and a half. And when I tell you everybody I worked with, because again, then a lot of these actors weren't as big, and the ones that were, I was just happy to be where I was. I don't think I ever understood the gravity of what I was surrounded by, but I basically got acting classes by Dario Lindo and Sally Field. I did table reads in the movie that I did specifically. My boyfriend was Jake Gyllenhaal. Gorgeous. Yeah, he's so sweet. My half sister, because it was a story that took place in the 70s, and it was an interracial couple, and it was a man and a woman that fell in love, and they both brought their daughters into this, and then they had to separate because the feds were after them. And so my half sister was Kerry Washington.
Oh my God.
My stepfather was Michael Beach, and my mother was Connie Britton.
Isn't that wild? Yes.
And now older, I'm like, oh my God. But then I was like, oh, yay, cool. I'm doing a movie. This is fun. Cool. And at the time, like I said, because I had studied and I had to go into the performing arts school, and I had booked it while I was in the school, and because I went to performing arts school, they wanted you to go do and work, you know. And so I went and worked and basically came back and got like an A, you know, because they were like, okay, yay, you're like doing it.
Real world experience, yeah.
It was amazing. Mm-hmm. But what's wild is that while I was there, I had the moment where I didn't want to act anymore. And then I decided that this is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So up until then, everything that I had done had just not, and I don't know if surface is the right word, but, you know, you do a commercial, you do a modeling job, and you just are, and, you know, like little scenes where you're just acting and it's fine. This demanded emotional, like, vulnerability from me that at the time I did not know. I didn't allow myself to feel a lot. And now looking back, of course, the life that I had lived.
Also that time, right? You're a teenager?
Teenager? Yeah. I mean, I was 12. I turned 13 when I was
self-conscious. Because I got guiding light when I was young. And I remember those emotional scenes.
It's the hardest
time. It was so
hard
to access that, you know, because you're so self-aware and self-conscious about, because you're still young.
Yeah,
you
still
care what
so
other
young.
People think or what you look like or
exactly.
whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. And so what was amazing about it was that every week we would shoot a scene, and then we would showcase it at the end of the week, and everybody would watch whatever scenes they shot. And I had this one scene with Michael Beach where my character's a little bit older and she's looking for her father, and she finds him, and she's like, where were you? Why did you leave me? And it required this vulnerability from me that I just didn't have inside of me. And so it was very difficult for me to get there. And in the middle of it, I stopped and I go, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do this. I don't know what you're asking of me, but I can't get there. Like, what do you mean? Like, you know, and it felt so uncomfortable, and I got really uncomfortable. And Michael pulled me aside and was like, forget everybody else, you and me. Let's just do a little improv. And he got me to a place that I, to this day, don't really know what it was. But I went from being like, I don't want to do this anymore, to after I did the scene and we did it all, I went, I never not want to feel this. Wow. This is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And I'm young. And this is the first time I think that I really acknowledged what this world was. And just, it was like my soul, just like, I don't know how to explain it, just knew. And at the end of it, Stanley Tucci, who was watching our work that day. I know it's crazy saying these names.
I want to go to Utah.
Yeah. Yeah, this, at the Sundance Filmmakers Lab, it's like everybody. And he came up to me and he was like, wow, to watch the process of you going through that. Because everyone could see, I straight up out loud was like, nope, this is not going to happen. I'm not doing this. And he goes, where you were able to get was amazing from where you started. And he was like, you have this talent in you. You're so young that I think that if you keep working on it, that you have a place in this industry. And of course I'm young. I'm like, okay. He goes, well, if this is something that you want to do when you're older, I went to SUNY Purchase Acting Conservatory, which is where Lawrence went, which I know Lawrence from because I ended up going there. And he said, yeah, Lawrence. Yeah. Which is great. And so he said, but you have to audition for it. So when you're older, if you want to do it, this is a great learning, you know, for you. And I said, okay. So I did the movie, and then my mom met my stepdad, who's amazing, and we moved to Westchester, New York. So we left the city, and I had to leave the professional performing arts school, which pissed me off at first. Because I was like, you want me to go to a public school? You want me to go to school? Like, what? But like, why? I'm doing great here, but I had to live in one of the five boroughs to go to PPAS. And so I considered even staying with a friend in like Alphabet City. I was like, I got to figure out how to stay. But my mom's like, no, let's go. So the good thing is that I stopped acting because I couldn't go on auditions. Really, I had to do doctor's appointments, which I took those. Don't get me wrong. I was like, look, if something comes up, I want to go. But it allowed for me to be a kid, to be a teenager, to hang out with my friends, to kind of just step away from it. But funny enough, until we go over, my first screen test was for One Life to Live, which was for the role that Melissa Fumero played for Adriana. Yes, when I was 16 years old.
Wow.
And so that was one of my doctor appointments. And I went in and I almost got it, but I didn't because I was it wasn't meant for me, but I was too young as well because I was still in high school. And then they let go of the actress that they hired probably like 6 to 8 months after that. And they called back and they go, are you still in school? And I was like, yeah, well, I'm in my senior year now. And they were like, oh, okay. And then it went to Melissa. But it was wild because, you know, out of all the things, I think that was the universe being like, hey, just so you know, soap world.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, everything leads you to where you're supposed to
exactly, be. Exactly, yeah. And then, I did a couple of auditions, but it was great. I got to hang out and be a teenager and just kind of really give myself time away from it because I had decided in that moment, this is something I want to do forever. And then all of a sudden it was taken from me. And in the sense of me having to go and just live life and go be a teenager.
And that's important.
Which right? is so
it just,
important.
It just
which
gives
is so
you
important.
So much to pull from.
Yeah, life experience.
Life experience.
Exactly.
From,
and then
you know.
By the time that I was 18 and I was like, okay, this is something I want to do. Then it brought me to audition for Juilliard, audition for SUNY Purchase. And if I don't get into either of those, then I moved to LA. And I got into SUNY Purchase from 26 from all around the US. And then I went into that training round, which was insane and tough. And I left after a year. I decided that it wasn't for me. Well, half of my teachers loved me and half of them did not. And so what I realized was that I was being put down by half of my teachers. And a lot of them was like, you'll basically would tell me, well, you'll never be a theater actress, but the camera will love you. It was always like, but then I had half the teachers that were rooting for me. So it was an interesting thing for me because I realized at that moment, oh, just because I'm in this acting conservatory doesn't mean that everybody's on my team.
I wonder if that was just your experience, or do you know from any of the other people that were in the class with you, if that was their tactic to be like, we'll have good cops and bad cops?
No, from my experience at that time, I was the only one in my class because there were 26 of us. Uh-huh. So because there were only so many of us, it was very evident as to who were the favorites, who was struggling, who was this and that. And so at that time, I remember, I'm going to prove to them that I can do this, that I can do theater. And then I realized along the way, I don't need to prove this to them. I know I can do it. And at the end, I did my final scenes. And I remember they called me into the office and they were like, that was great, Sherry. And in that moment, I was like, thank you. But I realized this, I didn't do this for you. I did this for me. And so then I moved out to LA and my mom was incredibly supportive. At first she was like, oh my God, you're not finishing. Well, at first, I mean, she's always been so supportive and it's great. You know, she never pressured me. She was always like, if you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it. And, you know, she's my best friend. I grew up with her. And so for me, having that support, especially moving out here where, you know, no one except for like my manager was definitely its own ride, but you know, it's been a ride.
I don't want to give those mean teachers too much of a pass, but I will say, like, because I know we all have the experience, right, of the the bad audition or, or even something where it's like, but you, it's often easier to hear the criticism than it is to hear the accolades.
Uh-huh.
And I wonder if it, there was a method there to be like, we know that she's got something and we're going to push her and maybe like knock her down a peg just
maybe.
So that
I would imagine in a conservatory, I mean, that's what they do. They like push you and really like, okay, how can we mold you into just who you are as an actor? But in turn.
But a year feels like you knew what you were doing.
I learned a lot. I feel like my most beneficial class was my speech class because I used to have a very thick New York accent.
Me too.
You say talk, which was like, which if I go back to New York, it will come out.
I think I told you this. Wait, let's see. I want to hear yours and then I'll do mine.
Okay, well, you want me to talk like a New Yorker. So if I talk the way that I used to talk, I like
you
used
talk.
To have
talk like that.
Yes. Yes. And then the speech coach was like, no, sure, stop. She was like, you do not speak correctly. And I was like, what are you talking about? So every day I had an eraser in the tip or like a cork in the corner of my mouth, and I'd have to practice my like sounds with my tongues and rearrange the way that I spoke. And I could not stand this class. I consider it like math to me. Like I was like, oh, but by the end of it, I was like, oh my goodness. Wow.
Well, suddenly you go from being someone who can play, a Latina woman from New York to a Latina woman from anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
I was the, I think I told you this. I was the, on my high school's video yearbook, because I talked so well, I was the narrator. And there's a line where I said, we should give a big round of applause to everyone who participated in this year's science fair.
I love it.
No, you did not. Wait, that's how you talk?
Yes. I had a thick accent. And then I had
You did?
I did. But I did forensics in high school, which is sort of like mini theater.
Yeah.
And I had a coach who was like, and also an acting teacher, I think when I moved out here, who was like, because I had started to lose it, but I still had it.
Well,
they said you don't look like the guy from New York, and you're not going to get
only get so many opportunities,
right? And so I would go up for auditions against Theo Rossi and the guy who played Turtle on Entourage. And I'm like, no, they're going to get the job because they look that part. And so I had to lose mine too.
Match it up, but
but let's give a big round of applause to our original accents.
Oh,
yes. always.
Hilarious. But I don't know about you, but I find if I try and do it now, I sound like the guy who's trying to do a New York accent.
Exactly. It's a little hard. Yeah. I'd literally have to call my girlfriends and be like, hey, let me talk to you real quick. Okay.
Have a glass of wine. And
to kind of just get it back.
Yeah. Matching outfits. Extravagant birthdays. Many nicknames. A few classic moves of a dog-obsessed parent. At Ollie, they're obsessed with how obsessed you are with your pup, which is why they obsess over giving your dog the best. Ollie's fresh, human-grade recipes are developed by real chefs and backed by vet nutritionists. The meals are perfectly portioned and come with a puptainer and scoop for easy storing and mess-free serving, delivering the best experience for you and your pup. And through the Ollie app, you can actually check in on your dog's health with real vets. By uploading a picture, their team can check your dog's weight, digestion, teeth, and coat. They'll then provide next steps on how to keep them thriving. And because they're just as obsessed as you are, there's zero judgment if you check in every day. You could say Ollie feeds the obsession. Go to ollie.com/firstbox and use code FIRSTBOX to get 70% off your welcome kit. Ollie, feed the obsession.
The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
So you came out here and you've done, I mean, Days of Our Lives, is that like the big job? That's the...
But you hustled.
I've always had the hustler mentality, or at least the like survivor of like, I've had 2 to 3 jobs at the same time. I paid all my bills. And I basically worked in the club. I worked at a music studio. I worked at my friend's restaurant, basically wherever I could, and then auditioned. And, you know, it's interesting because Gabby being my dream role, I auditioned for Gabby when I was 22.
I know, that's right.
It was first created, and I got pretty close to getting it, but it wasn't meant to be.
Was Marnie casting back then?
Yeah, Marnie was casting. Wow. And the wild thing about that is that at that time, I really, really wanted Gabby, and I loved it because also being a Latina in this industry at that time, and now it's grown a lot, but there weren't very many roles for Latina actresses and also ones that were just a normal person. Mm-hmm. It was always like a caricature of a Latina, which, you know, it just was what it was. And so I really wanted it. This was one of the roles, you know, like when you audition and things aren't meant to be, and that's okay. But Gabby was one of the ones that I always looked back on and I wish I had gotten. And so it's wild because, you know, I would book, I started booking my commercials and I would book national commercials, which are great, which definitely helped me like financially. Yeah. Yes. I did the McDonald's commercial, Verizon commercial, Kia commercial.
My husband, before he was writing, paid his bills for years.
Yeah, the commercial world is amazing. Yes. And then I booked Newsroom was my first.
Oh, yeah,
And it was for Chelsea, the bartender at Hang Chu's. And I had auditioned, actually, well, I'll tell you the story because it's funny. I had auditioned for a server role. And I remember every pilot season would come around and I wouldn't really get many opportunities. And I would and I wouldn't. And so I went into my agent's office and I was like, hey, so how's it looking? They were like, Sherry, I'm so sorry, but you're not on the list. And I was like, what is this list? And they were like, there's a list of actors that they call in. And then if they're not available, then they go down to the next list. It's kind of just how it is. And I was like, okay. So my mom was like, well, we're going to Mexico. Do you want to come meet us? And I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm out. It's not like anything's going to happen. You know, it's like pilot season. I'm so used to it. I got a last minute audition for Newsroom and it was for a server role. And I was like, oh, like I love the Newsroom, but also I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I'm not going to get this. I go into the audition and there's every kind of, there's redheads, blondes, like all of us. And it's one line. It's, here's your chili charred beef skewer. Here's your chili charred beef skewer, which I'll never forget now because I didn't write it down. Instead, at the time, I was reading a book called How to Get Everything You Ever Wanted that I had found at this bookstore. And one of the things was the karma mountain. You work through karma in your life and you work through forgiveness. And then there's like different steps on like how to attract things in your life. And one of the things at the end that I really loved was, and so it is. It's like claiming what you want and so it is, and then letting it go. So I had this piece of paper and for some reason, I don't know what compelled me, but instead of writing the damn line, I wrote, and so it is. And I laughed and I signed it with my little signature and I went, huh. And then I sat there and I got called in and she was like, okay, let's do this. I messed it up and I made up something different. I said, here's your barbecue chili charred skewer. And she looked at me and I go, that's not the line. She goes, that's okay. I could do it again. And I turned around and looked at the piece of paper and the line wasn't on there. It said, and so it is. I was like, damn it, Sherry, you couldn't have written the damn line. So then I was like, no, I got this. I got this. I turned around, did the line again. It was completely wrong. And she was like, it's okay. So I was like, oh shit, whatever. That night I go home, I talk to my girlfriend and I was like, it's one line. One line. For some reason, I couldn't get one line. You can give me like 5-10 pages. I can do it. But one line, I ended up being on a veil for it the next day. And I was like, oh, look at that. But I'm packing from Mexico. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm already out. And also, I don't think I'm going to get it. You know, you're on a veil and then you get dropped. It is what it is. They drop me 10 minutes later, which is fine because I'm like, huh, but hey, at least I was in a veil. Then I go home and 30 minutes later, they call me. They go, you have 30 minutes to get to Gower Studios to audition for a new role that Aaron Sorkin wants you to audition for. And I said, huh? What? So I dropped everything. I go there. I go to the waiting room. They give me the sides and they're like, Sherry, thank you so much for coming on short notice. And I'm like, thank you, thinking other girls are going to show up. It's just me. And she was like, just take your time. And it's like five lines, maybe like 4 or 5. And I'm like, okay. So I go in, I do it and I'm able to do it. You know, it's fine. And they're like, okay, so are you available next Wednesday? I'm like, uh-huh. I'm not available. I'm leaving tomorrow. But like I say that because I don't understand how serious this is. And I walk out and on my drive home, I get the call that I booked it. And I was like, mind you, I had no TV credits. It was the hardest thing. They were like, well, be getting a
Aaron Sorkin. I mean, that Aaron show Sorkin. Is so good.
So I ended up booking it and I met Aaron and he's so wonderful. And he said to me, you know, Sherry, there was just something about the way that it was just so natural. It was so, you just had this like, you just had something. And I was like, and here I screwed up the line and I thought I screwed this up. And it was a possible reoccurring, but they never ended up going back to the bar for the last season. But because of him, he gave me an opportunity. And then I booked Pretty Little Liars. And then I booked Banshee, you had a TV which credit. Was a whole story. And then
all of a sudden, not just a TV credit.
No. It just, yeah. And
he
it was,
an Aaron yeah, Sorkin it was TV like credit.
He gave me an opportunity when a lot of people didn't. Also something that I didn't think. And then, you know, so I'm just always so grateful.
Oh, I love that story.
That's an amazing story.
Okay, wait. So then just to fast forward a little bit.
Yeah, of course.
How does Days of Our Lives come back into your life and talk about?
Well, yeah. I love Days so much. So I'm a mom. I have a 4-year-old Phoenix. Who's amazing. And when I got pregnant, it was the first time I stepped away from the industry. And I was like, oh, this is nice. I don't have any lines to learn. I can just like be pregnant and just kind of like learn who am I without all of this? Mm-hmm. And so I didn't plan on getting back into the industry for a while. But after I had Phoenix, the universe had other plans. And a director I had worked with wrote me into her movie. And then my agents were like, so are you coming back? And I go, no, I'm not ready yet. I'm just doing this because I'm honored that she wrote me into her movie.
Yeah.
And then I had booked Guns N' Roses later that year, which was very difficult for me because I was breastfeeding and Phoenix refused a bottle. So he was on set. And so in between, I was breastfeeding and then back on breastfeeding. I would feed him until so that he could go home and have enough food. And then at 4 a.m, I'd get home and then immediately feed him again. It was so stressful that I realized after that. And mind you, they were wonderful. I always had a fear that being a mother in the industry wouldn't have necessarily been welcomed. Mm-hmm. And this movie proved to me that not only was I welcomed, but it was such an incredible experience. However, it was so difficult that I was like, I'm not ready. I'm just not ready yet. I think I just want to focus on being a mother and then allow this to be. And then right before I booked the show, I had gone through postpartum depression pretty bad.
I did too. Her too.
Yeah. And mine didn't start at the beginning. The first 8 months, I mean, you know, go through it, but at 8 months it hit and all of a sudden I was sad and I was going through a lot. And as you know, postpartum depression is like,
I had postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety.
Oh God. Yeah. It's so difficult.
It's really rough.
I didn't know many people that had gone through it, but one thing that...
It's also shameful. You don't want to talk about it with people because they'll say... What do you mean? You have a healthy kid and it's a whole thing.
And the gratitude, but I'm grateful for those that have talked about it because I feel like that helped me to know that it was okay what I was experiencing. But I had a very difficult time and I had a breakdown. I had a breakdown and I cried and I was like, what is it? What am I feeling? What do I want? And then for the first time in a long time, I spoke to the universe. I spoke to God and I said, you know what? I do want to go back to work and I want to go back to work and I want to be respected for what I do. And I don't want fame, but I want to be kind of just known for the work. I basically was very specific with everything I said. And then I let it go and I felt better, but I was still going through my postpartum depression. Then Days, the audition came around. And when it first came around, they like to do alias names when they're recasting a role.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that it was Gabby or that Camila was leaving. And so I got the audition and I thought, I haven't auditioned for Days since I was 22. How wild that this is coming back around. And I thought it was to be a sister for Camila or like a family member. And I was like, ooh, awesome. Did the audition. Then I did the callback with Marnie. And I still didn't know it was Gabby until I got the contract because I got a screen test. And then I saw for the role of Gabby, my heart dropped. I immediately Googled it. And I was like, hold on, what? Found out that she was leaving after 13 years. Wow. And I called my reps and I was like, oh my God, this is Gabby. This is Gabby. This is the role that got away. It's back. And so at that moment, I didn't think, oh, this is meant for me. But I just thought, I have an opportunity again. This is, okay, the universe. Something is happening beyond me that I don't know. And when I worked with Marnie on like just the leading up to the chemistry read, I said, Marnie, you probably don't remember, but I auditioned for Gabby. She goes, yes, I do remember. I've been looking for your tape. Mm. And I was like, oh my God. And Marnie is the best. I love her so much.
I told her,
she
I
should
said
be
to her,
on set.
I said to her, I go, you know, you're Marty's Elvis at this point.
My, manager so said there should be a drinking game where every time
Who
Marty's name, Michael, my manager, he's like, there should be a drinking game. Marty, every time her name is mentioned, you have to do a
Marty's
shot.
Marty's the best. Anyway, yeah, and so I remember when I did the screen test, there were six girls. I actually tested against a friend of mine, which is so funny.
Who did you screen test with? Which actor?
Brandon.
Oh,
Brandon in the Demira Mansion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I remember my friend leading up to it was like, "So how do you feel about this?" And I was like, "You know, I just feel so grateful that this opportunity came back around." She goes, "Do you want it?" I go, "Yes, I do want it." And I go, "But you know what? I understand this industry and I know how it is. So if it's not meant for me, that's okay. All I want is to go there, give it my all, do my best so that no matter what, I can always look back on this and know that I gave it my all." And that was it. And I went in, and right before the screen test, I didn't know at the time that the Demira symbol was the phoenix, and my son's name is Phoenix. So I looked at the table right before we started, and I saw the phoenix statue. And I was like, is that a phoenix? And then I took a deep breath, and then I started. I gave it my all. I was so proud of myself. And then I left, and I was like, okay, whatever happens. Yeah. And then I got the call a couple days later, and of course, they did the whole, how did you feel about it? How was it? Okay, well, we'll give you feedback. And when they called me, and they were like, it was you. No, you were the only one. No one compared. You are Gabby. I cried, and of course, just gratitude, and then I got my ass to LA, and I was like, here we go, and my goodness, whoo!
Wait a second, where were you?
Oh, I was in Texas.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
I was right. in Texas for
in
a
Texas?
Little bit.
She was living in Texas.
Yeah, we were living in Texas because the strike had happened, and we had Phoenix, and financially, everything kind of went to shit.
Yeah.
I lost health insurance. We basically kind of just had nothing at that time. And Sean's grandmother left him a house in Texas. Yeah. And so she was like, well, here you go. So we went and lived in the middle of Texas, in the middle of nowhere with cows, bird watching.
Wow.
Yeah, you just blow up Tannerite for fun. Like, it's a very different world. Look, I'm a city girl. So I loved it for what it was. And also I was like, get me out of here.
You know what's amazing, besides everything that you've mentioned, is like, I don't know your path has been, it has not seemed to be easy, but yet you still are exactly where you are. And I think you have earned the, all the wonderful things in your life that you have, you know,
Thank
and
you.
Like, I, you know, you sort of don't wish adversity on somebody, but at the same time, it's like you are who you are because of it all.
Exactly.
And it's a beautiful story.
Thank you so much. And it is beautiful to be able to look back on my life and just see why things weren't meant to be, or maybe not even trying to understand why they weren't meant to be, but accepting of just, okay, well, that's not my path. That's her path, you know, or like, I had to go through this and now I'm this way. And so, you know, and obviously I've done a lot of self work on myself to really get to where I am now. And, you know, I feel like I'm just very proud of where I'm at.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Gabby.
Amazing. Yeah.
We'll talk about Gabby because we have Soapy Hotline questions.
Oh, right.
And fans
okay.
write in and they have specific
questions
about Gabby. Wait, are you going to start with that one? Okay, go.
Tell us what it's like working with Greg.
Oh my God, so much fun. Ugh. First of all, I love our relationship
on
the show.
Really
we have come such a long way.
She hated me. I hated Gabby.
Gabby, yeah. Despise. Well, when I first came in, I was like, so who are Gabby's friends? And they were like, Gabby's friends. They were like, no, Gabby doesn't really have
friends.
And granted, because it's an existing role, I did a little research. There was so much in the Wikipedia page that at a certain point I had to stop. I was like, this is so much.
It's too much to take in, I know.
So I've learned.
Yeah. And, it's just...
and being a recast is its own thing. But working with Greg has been amazing. I mean, you know, everyone on the show and the characters that they have and they bring to, it's like, it brings something different out of you. And I feel like we have such a fun dynamic.
Oh, it's wonderful.
It's
one of my favorites.
And I also feel like you've made me a better actor because, it's great.
I
you know,
take
like
any
I learn. No, I you know,
you
but no, you have because you're so prepared, you're so committed that when you're there, you're free to play. And I love that. I love being working opposite of somebody that does the work so that when you go, you can just live in this world and see what happens. And I feel like with your character and Gabby together, it just allows for that. And it's so it makes for really fun scenes.
I love working with you too. Aww. Take some notes. Okay. Question two. I like this question. Is there anything from Gabby's past that you, whether it was your Wikipedia search or anything you know about Gabby's past that you learned that you wish you could have been there to play?
All of it. Everything. Yeah. I will say, though, that because I've been doing a lot of storylines that the previous Gabby played, it's been fascinating to do the research because I have a friend online who's a fan, but also a friend, Namba, who will send me clips because I'll be doing a scene coming up where I'm talking about a situation that I know nothing about, but I know through history, and I'll reach out and I'm like, hey, do you know this scene? Can you send it to me? And then he'll send it to me. So I'm able to watch. And I get really into our show anyways when I'm in, like, I love it. Even the rehearsal, I'm always like, no, she didn't. I love it so much. Like, I'm like, I get it. I get why people love it. And so it's great because it's taught me a lot. And it helps me to get into a space where I'm able to emulate authentically from just me as Sherry into Gabby of what I feel like that would evoke emotionally. In that storyline. So all of it, every single one.
You're tremendous in the role. I know that it was not the smoothest transition and that there was some fan backlash, which happens often with recasts, but you have handled that with such grace and have really commanded this role and made it yours. I mean, it was yours from the day you got there, but you have really just stepped into it in such a beautiful way. I adore you. I adore working with you.
Thank you so much. Well, I am Gabby. I feel that Gabby, like now, well, you know, at the beginning, it was tough. Like you're coming in, the expectations, the recast, the fans, all of that. But I think the really beautiful thing about Days and Noel and everybody is that they have allowed for me to grow and to really find myself within this character. And now I'm Gabby.
Love it. Well, you sure are. I wish we had more time because you are just the greatest and we could do this for hours and hours more.
Thank you guys.
You're beautiful.
So much. Oh, as are you.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to be gushing on about you to Lee.
Same. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for being here. You can watch my beautiful, beautiful co-star and me together on Days of Our Lives streaming daily on Peacock. You can watch this episode of Soapy and any other episodes you may have missed on the CBS YouTube channel or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Why are you smiling at me like that?
I love the dynamic you guys have. It's so fun.
You're the greatest. Thank you so much.
Thank you
all so much, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Paramount Plus is your streaming home for the NFL on CBS every Sunday.
Touchdown!
With the most anticipated games and football's biggest stars.
Oh, what a catch!
Sign up for Paramount Plus today.
See you Sunday!